Hello, and welcome to Real Talk, the show that questions anything and everything from major social issues to pet care. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, here with you every Tuesday at lunchtime and at your convenience at voiceofvashon.org/realtalk. This is the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM and voiceofvashon.org. Washington's Governor Jay Inslee recently signed into law Senate Bill 6164, which allows for prosecutorial discretion to petition the court to resentence an individual if the person's sentence no longer advances the interests of justice. That's a quote from the bill. SB 6164 goes into effect in June, and today we're going to put a human face and voice on that new law. On the phone with me today is Lawrence Curtis Jenkins, accomplished visual artist and founder of the Circle of Life Gardens and Farms, and an inmate at Stafford Creek Correctional Center. Welcome, Lawrence.
Hello.
In the studio with me is Lawrence's wife, Alita Haskins, an entrepreneur and manager of Circle of Life Gardens and Farms. Welcome, Alita.
Thank you.
I need to make a couple notes here. One is that Lawrence's phone time is limited, so he may need to disconnect and reconnect with us during the interview. The other is, in full disclosure, I am part of a group of activists working to help Lawrence and his resentencing efforts. So let's start with the description, Lawrence, of how SB 6164 applies to you. How do you see this law applying to you and your current situation?
I see this law applying to me due to, you know, just the transformation and just the overall turnaround of my life and the work and opportunities that I've taken advantage of, even when I didn't see a possibility of law change or didn't really see the end of this long journey or sentence that I've been sentenced to. So it was more of hearing the Senate Bill 6164 was more of like, okay, finally, you know, it's going to pay off. You know, all the hard work, all the commitment to positive programming, all of the involvement with groups and opportunities that were provided here in prison, it came to a, you know, a glimmer of hope. So it applies to me, you know, it's just more of a reward, you know, honestly. You know, I can't really find the right words to better describe it. You know, it's just a reward to all the sacrifice and the growing and the ups and downs and, you know, that got me to where I am today.
We want to hear a little more about exactly what that is. Where were you when you were first incarcerated? And how long ago was that? Who were you at that time?
8 years ago, I was 23 years old, and, you know, I was really just struggling, you know, with trying to find, you know, the right, you know, avenue for me to take just to, you know, really just live a productive life, you know what I'm saying, and really just pursue my dreams. I wanted to go to college, you know, and get a degree in business and sociology, you know, were two major focuses, but my family really needed help running the family business to sustain, you know, the bills and, you know, just housing, and we were struggling. So I had to make a choice between, you know, education or taking care of my family, and I chose, you know, family. And it really led me to, you know, living a life that really wasn't what I desired to do. So it was more of, you know, just taking care of others. And mentally it had an effect because I was putting myself on hold, and it took me to addiction, drinking, you know, depression, and, you know, relationships not really working, and just a whole bunch of just failed or missed opportunities, I should say. And
so, Lawrence,
it was hard.
Yeah. Let's fast forward. Yeah. Who are you today, and what changed you?
Who I am today, I'm, you know, I really, you know, believe that I'm a strong, you know, activist for, you know, environmentalism, sustainability, you know, and just, you know, humanity, you know, and just trying to make the world better. And what changed me was, you know, a conversation I had with my mother who passed away recently, where, you know, I told her, everything I do is for you. I just want you to be proud of me. And she was like, Lawrence, don't do it for me. You got to do it for you. And when she told me that, it just really made me think about, what am I doing for me? You know, like all these things that I'm doing in my life as far as growing food in prison, education, self-educating, you know, helping people, writing blogs to try to inspire people. It really made me put that in perspective, like, am I doing it to make others proud of me, or am I really doing this for me? And if and because it's something that I'm passionate about and really want to do, and if that's the case, let me take this more serious. And it was the case. So it made me, that conversation with my mom is when I made a decision to, you know, turn and really take it serious, like being better, a service to others, you know, helping people, you know, taking science and sustainability more serious. And I started getting visions for, you know, if I took this more serious when I was out, or gave this bigger consideration, would this have put me in prison? And the answer was no. So that assured me that I found something that, you know, I really enjoyed doing. It's for me. It made me happy. I didn't do it for others. And I think that's what...
That's who you are today. So, Lawrence, yeah. You are currently managing or running the Circle of Life Gardens and Farms from your incarcerated situation. What was it about being in prison that gave you opportunities to learn about farming and about art? What opportunities did you get, if any?
Sustainability in Prison Projects provided a, you know, a program. You know, they're in every prison, but at Walla Walla, Washington State Penitentiary, they have the Sustainable Practices Lab where we do all sorts of things. And one of the new projects was the development of the green zone. And essentially, you know, we had to build and cultivate land and build greenhouses and composting and all of that. And it was just, you know, just a project to allow people to create a healthy food source from within the prison. And that right there is really when I started realizing the opportunity in the therapeutic side of growing food, you know, and just the whole collective work of working with other inmates from different backgrounds and races and coming together to create a solution to a food problem that we were experiencing at that place. And the thought came to me, like, you know, essentially the community I come from, Seattle, you know, in the areas that I grew up in and my friends come from, we experience the same problem with not having healthy food, you know, not even having the opportunity to grow our own. So that's when the vision came, like, man, I want to share this with my community one day.
So you are now running how many different programs in how many different prisons that are under the umbrella of the Circle of Life?
So currently, right now, we're operating more outside of prison, but currently inside of prison, we're at Stafford Creek Correction Center, and we're working through the cultural groups here, and the Black Prisoners Caucus, the Asian Pacific Islander Group, the Native Circle, and essentially we all came together, brought our families together, and you know, and they're advocating for us from the outside, and you know, from legislation, you know, policy. And what we're doing in here is we're taking the growing space inside the prison and turning it into sites where we can educate each other about gardening, the importance of it, the history of it, and how we can take these skills that we're using here inside the prison and share it with, you know, our communities, which is predominantly Seattle and Tacoma, you know, urban areas. So my role is to educate people on urban agriculture and how to develop gardens inside of these urban environments. And so as far as the program operating in the prison, we're loosely operating. We're trying to get more support from the administration to give us access at the entire horticulture program that goes on here. At that level, like, inmates don't really have a voice. You know, it's more of a bureaucratic decision-making process. So on the ground, what we do is say, to the prison, give us the seeds and the starts and the time and the space, and we'll create and do our own education. So we're peer educating. You know, we have people from the community coming in to our events, and they'll speak. They'll do workshops. So, like I said, we're loosely operating in Stafford Creek Correction Center in the community. We're operating at God's House of Second Chances. We're operating on Vashon Island and a farm in Auburn. And what we're doing is, from here, the guys that are organizing and working with me, the gardeners, they're getting on the phone and they're sharing with their family how to start a garden. You know, everything that they're learning, they're passing it on to their children, their loved ones. And we're building.
So this is going outside Stafford Creek, and I think that's where we bring in Alita, your wife. Alita Haskins, you are, if I'm understanding this correctly, you're managing Circle of Life Gardens and Farms outside Stafford and making sure that food is distributed beyond the prison. Am I correct about that?
That's correct.
Tell us how that works.
So under, again, my husband's curriculum and his guidance from the prison, we're now building garden beds that are inside each one of the God's House of Second Chances properties. And then now we're going to be implementing the starter plants and, you know, things like that. And so as each, as we start growing the produce, we'll be able to distribute it to those in the community. And so that's how that works.
So Lawrence, how long ago did you start this program in the prison?
We started 3 years ago, and it was basically I was invited into a group called the Black Prisoners Caucus, and where we came together, and the guys in the circle were like, you know, we want to start a garden, you know, for the BPC. And my first observation was that the BPC is about building powerful communities, and I shared with the guys in the circle that we can do that and so much more. And for me, it was an instant connection to how do I share this with my community? You know, how do I deliver it? And it was an opportunity right there on the spot to finally, you know, share environmentalism, sustainability, you know, community food system, the things that I was learning through sustainability and practices with my community. And it was, you know, it was instant total access for me. They're like, brother, we heard about you. We heard about your work. You know, go ahead and create. And, you know, I just, you know, shot for the moon. So basically what I did was I asked a few questions about what all work, you know, does this group cover? And it was reentry, it was legislation, it was education, it was family, it was youth. And that was like perfect, you know, because sustainability and sustainable development, you know, considers the entire community and everything in the community. There's no throwaway resources or no throwaway people. And this is the principle that we stand on in sustainability. So what I did was I created a program, educational program for inside that would also have a pathway for reentry at the reentry housing. And the ultimate goal is to create a farm with tiny homes on it. So that right there was the main pathway. So the next question was, how does that work? How do we create a program in here that's recognized by DOC? Well, DOC requires programs to be evidence-based. So I based it on, you know, the therapeutic aspects. I based it on the fact that we are getting a lot of processed foods and we needed healthier food options. And I based it on, you know, just the growing demand for urban agriculture, you know, and in the cities and most of us that are returning to. And a lot of staff supported it. A lot of outside people supported it. The prison supported it. So inside was comfortable with the idea of introducing a more robust program centered around urban agriculture. Because before Circle of Life, all they offered was prairie plant conservation, and it wasn't really based on food production. So with the support of Sustainability in Prisons Project, they supported the idea, and they agreed to give us soil, seeds, funding, reading material, and they did. And they've been standing behind us from 3 years ago forward. So the next step was, how do we implement community gardens in the community that will that these guys, when they're released, they can go out there and manage and facilitate and also encourage and empower the community to get involved.
All right. So that brings us to really...
we have 60 seconds remaining.
Oh, we're going to lose you in a minute. Yeah. So that brings us to, well, we'll talk to Alita for a little while, but that does bring us to the question of how your work with Circle of Life Farm and Gardens and your self-education are going to affect your potential resentencing. And we can talk to Alita a little bit about that if you need to hang up and redial. Do you need to?
I'll redial.
Okay.
I'll call back.
So, Alita, you are working with Lawrence and with the Circle of Life to bring the food that he is growing, but even more so, the program that he has created to the outside world. How are you doing that?
So I'm just continuously, well, back in January, we did our first Circle of Life Healthy Living Summit at Tacoma Community College just to bring more awareness to those in the community and just to let them know that all the work that Lawrence is doing from the inside, and we're bringing it out here to the community, to the outside, to be able just to let those in the community know that we offer the resources, not only healthy living, but also for what I do is as a housing director for those coming out of reentry, out of incarceration. And so we just, what we did is we just put the two components together. And so, and that's how, so from there we just, you know, just to continue to build. And like he said here a little bit ago, you know, the long-term goal is to eventually have enough farmland to be able to put some properties on there. And for those that are coming out of homelessness and reentry, that they'll be able to have that secured living. They'll be able to have the employment, the educational piece, if this is something that they want to do. You know, and I believe just, you know, now, today, it's just really important, even just, you know, for myself, you know, when I was suffering with mental illness and things like that, and so for myself and overweight, and I just found that eating healthier, you know, was the best option for me.
So Lawrence is back with us. Are you not, Lawrence?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Before I get to questions about how all that is going to work, how Circle of Life is going to work, I want to bring us back to the notion of Senate Bill 6164, which becomes law in June. And one of the questions that keeps coming to my mind, Lawrence, is you as an individual took advantage of opportunities presented to you and amplified those. That takes a particular kind of person. And I'm wondering if it's so extraordinary that are those opportunities available enough to folks who are less motivated perhaps than you, or just not as energetic or as smart or as talented, who are still in prison and still deserve resentencing? How available are programs for rehabilitation to the general prison population?
Well, to be all the way transparent, it's something, you know, that we sit here that we always talk about. Like, there's only so many programs that DOC offers, you know, like redemption, parenting classes, anger management, and it's a 10-week course and it's done. So the extraordinary circumstance that I created for myself is actually, you know, something that's new to a lot of people, and a lot of my peers are like, man, how do I do that? So at that point, I realized that I have to teach this to these other guys because they need to know. They need to know how to rebuild the relationship with their family. They need to know how to recreate a support system in the community. They need to know how to find something in life, you know, that they really enjoy doing that's positive and productive. And you know, so with the growth of just the vision for the Circle of Life, I took it a lot more serious and looked at, like, you know, how do I extend the ambition and just the desire and the commitment that I have to want to really do something that hasn't been done, or I haven't seen, or things that I only dreamed about, to a guy that may be interested in music or acting or, you know, writing a book. You know what I'm saying? So it was a new challenge for us, you know, and just, you know, our peers and, you know, other guys in here. And it was just like, you know, there's policies that say we can create businesses. There's policies that say we can create programs if we write a proposal. There's all these steps. So what we had to do was sit down together in the day room, on the yard, in any space we can gather and teach each other, you know, how to put our ideas onto a proposal, how to take ideas out of our head and make a plan or a business plan or a success formula, you know. And these are things that we have to, they don't offer through the educational program. So
yeah,
we self-educate.
That's my question. How much of an uphill climb is it for the average prisoner to access this kind of information? And so then let's take this a little further. Now that prosecutors can use discretion in considering resentencing appeals, tell me if I'm getting that right, how is your particular situation going to work as an example for future resentencing appeals? How will you go to the court and say, okay, I have served 8 years. Here's my total sentence. Here's what I've done with myself. In the meantime, how will you present that at a resentencing hearing? And maybe, Alita, you can give us some help in that discussion.
I will present that in a way of, because I can't remember the three elements of the 6164 right off the top of my head, but I know they look at you know, your behavior, your conduct since you've been inside. So I would present the fact that, you know, I would look at infractions, you know what I mean? And that's what they're going to look at. They're going to look at how well you've been behaving good. So for me, with one infraction, you know, in 8 years, and it was at the beginning of my sentence, I would present it as I've lived and contributed my life to something that has kept me focused, you know what I'm saying? It kept me positive, kept me productive, and allowed me to, you know, rebuild all of the things that were broken in my life, and things that keep me going in that direction. Like, I'm just deeply rooted in the very thing that's going to keep me on this positive pathway. You know, if you're looking at, you know, just the conduct of my character or how I react to situations, and to add more onto that, I've actually been through scenarios as far as losing my mother and my grandmother where I didn't know how it was going to affect me or how I was going to move on. But the work that I was doing, the programs that I was in, the people that were in my corner supporting me, you know, helped me get through that with much more ease than I could ever imagine. And it was almost like it never happened, like I never took a loss. So these are things that I would really highlight in my story as far as, you know, what kept me out of trouble, you know what I'm saying, and what is going to keep me out of trouble. As far as, I don't remember the other two elements of the prosecutorial discretion,
well,
but
Yeah, one of them is a reconsideration of the initial case and the points that it was given and whether that was equal to the severity of the situation. That's going to depend on your attorneys now and the attorneys that you had at the time. Am I correct about that?
Yeah. And I would speak on that when I'm asked about, you know, my initial crime where, you know, I pled guilty to my crime. So I own my wrong in what I did. And I never denied it. I never, you know, but the sentence was I got 30 years. And nobody was injured. So all I could ask for, you know, at a resentencing hearing is fair justice. You know, I'm not saying I didn't do anything. I'm not saying that I don't have remorse for what I did. I'm not saying that that I'm mad for what happened. All I would ask for is a fair sentence. I just want fair justice. And whatever that looks like, I can accept. You know what I mean? So I'm coming humble, you know, and I'm coming ready to talk about what led up to my crime, why it happened, and I'm willing to answer those questions that weren't answered in the beginning. And I think in the beginning of when I did get the time it was a lack of proper representation. It was a lack of information, you know, that I didn't even know about. And, of course, 6164 wasn't on the table. A lot
Correct.
Of the laws now
yeah.
weren't on the table. So right. with those now in support of, you know, justice, in, especially in my circumstance where it's an excessive sentence for what compared to what actually happened, all I could ask the court is give me what's fair, you know what I mean? The problems that I came to prison with suffering from mental illness, I was able to overcome by going through the proper counseling.
Mm-hmm.
I even took medicine, you know, and I went and it worked, you know, and then when I found horticulture and found, you know, Circle of Life Garden and Farms and, you know, just being of service to others and artwork, you know, that's another thing I didn't really talk
yeah,
about.
Yeah, and we're not going to have time to discuss your artwork, though. It'd be great if people could actually see some of it.
Yeah.
Alita Haskins, you're working on the outside with Circle of Life, and you're opening that up not just to Lawrence, but to others who might be able to find resentencing appeals and actually get out earlier. How are you going to communicate with those people? How are you going to help Lawrence and them as they come out through Circle of Life?
So how I do it is I get in contact with the families out here in the communities, and then I set up like a JPay, you know, and be able to communicate with them that
JPay
way.
JPay is?
So JPay is like an email, and that's their way of communicating from getting messages to us, you know, and just different
from
information
inside.
From the inside out
mm-hmm.
to the community. So
mm-hmm.
it's almost like an email form. And so I reach out to the family's loved ones and sit down with them and then, you know, and then find out what their case is and then do my best to line them up with an attorney or just line them up with whether it's housing or whatever they need.
You and Lawrence are creating a pipeline, essentially.
Yes.
For inmates.
Yes.
Who go through, Lawrence, are they going to have to go through your program inside in Stafford Creek in order to be able to participate in Circle of Life when they get out?
Absolutely not, because you know Circle Life is a new pathway. But what we also extend to is like my wife, she's real connected with the reentry directors and specialists around the state. So if it's not like if people are not interested in gardening or living on a farm or you know healthy living, but they want to get connected more with the resources that are going to support an artist or a musician or you know just you know. Different pathways, what we'll do is we'll actively go find people and contacts and resources for them and link them in. And we'll advocate for them. We'll walk, if people are out there in the community or are new to connecting with people inside, we'll, you know, my wife will help them set up JPay, phone conversations, and just really help build that authentic relationship to where we're not just facilitating, you know, someone to get a resource or a service. We're also building that relationship that's going to lead to a strong support system and a healthy one. You know,
thank
what I mean?
You, Lawrence.
So
thank
yeah.
you, Lawrence. We are out of time, unfortunately. Oh. I've been talking with Lawrence Jenkins, who is in Stafford Creek Correctional Center right now and working to find his way out through Senate Bill 6164. And he has legal fees. Those legal fees we're hoping will be supported by those on the outside. There's a current GoFundMe campaign in his name available to folks, and we will have that information on Voice of Vashon. I've also been talking with Lawrence's wife, Alita Haskins, who is here in the studio with us. Thank you for listening to Real Talk. We are here every Tuesday at lunchtime and on voiceofvashon.org/realtalk at your convenience. Thank you, Lawrence, for joining us. Thank you, Alita, for joining us. There's so much more to this story. And thank you for listening, folks.